the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
Now, for the Culture Club today, we're joined by, well, this is becoming, I think, something of an annual tradition, somebody who is involved in supporting the Jack and Jill Children's Foundation by doing a piece of artwork which can be purchased. Peter O'Brien is this year's guest from the Jack and Jill Children's Foundation Incognito event. He is a fashion designer of some renown. Peter, thank you very much for joining us.
That's my pleasure, absolutely.
Which, does this mean that you're a good artist as well? That if you're somebody who designs high-end fashion, that you also have an eye for a good drawing or a good sketching?
Yeah, I think I was probably born with a pencil in my hand. I drew all the time. And, you know, when I was at O'Connell Schools, Christian Brothers, I spent all my time drawing ladies in dresses, which was very strange for a boy in a, you know, in a Catholic school. But I always drew.
Did you get bullied for that?
No, because you kind of just develop strategies. I was really good at English, so I used to write people's English essays for them. And I'm really ashamed to admit this. And all the women, if they are listening, will beat me up. I used to draw naked women with huge bosoms. So that made them very happy. So I was kind of a class mascot in a way. I was a strange boy. But yeah, that was my survival tactic. You know, yes, because I was weird, you know. And we used to have to play football on Wednesday afternoon in the Phoenix Park. And I hated it I can't begin to tell you how much I hated it. And I complained so much that they actually allowed me. I was the only boy who did art in the inter, now junior cert. I used to draw kind of a withered banana and a shriveled apple every Wednesday afternoon in the school hall in O'Connell's. And I did art for my junior cert.
You can give us any clues as to what you might have done for the Incognito event, because nobody's supposed to know who's the identity of what they're buying.
No, you're not, and I'll get beaten up if I say, but I think most people know what I draw. I tend not to draw guns and warriors and soldiers. They tend to be ladies in posh frocks, so there's a slight hint there.
And at present, what sort of stuff are you doing?
Well, I haven't really done fashion for a while. I came back from Paris 20 years ago, and then I got involved within costume. I did a lot of theatre costume design. And then I stepped in for Imranim Weldownik, who was teaching out at IADD, teaching costume design. She said, I'm working on a film. Would you do it for me for a month or so? And 12 years later, I'm still doing it. I'm still teaching. I love it.
Why? What's it about teaching?
I think there's a wonderful sense of possibility that young people have. I think, like acting, you can't phone it in. They know if you're cheating them. And Alan Bennett says, you know, in the History Boys, you have to pass the parcel. And my field of knowledge is quite deep, but it's quite narrow. And I think it's kind of useful to kids going into costume design. So if they pick it up and run with it, it makes you feel great. You know, it's great. And they keep you on your toes.
Well, I just want to let people know, incognito.ie is the website that you can go to. You can purchase, well, you don't know who it is, an original postcard artwork, €75. And it's a massive fundraiser each year for the Jack and Jill Children's Foundation. Have you ever done it for them
before?
No,
this is the first time I've done it. But it's a brilliant thing. It's really more like an auction, or it's more like a raffle than an auction, in fact, because if 25 people bid on the same drawing, you know, a name is metaphorically pulled out of a hat. Yeah. So it's kind of a raffle. But we all did three. They send you, we all have the same material on which to work. They send you three slightly large postcards. So you draw on those.
The late Paul Costello actually did it, and came in for a Culture Club a few years ago about his involvement with it.
They've had all sorts of amazing people. Tracy Emin did it once, and I know Mick O'Dea has done it, and I know Bono's done it. Lots of people have done it.
Okay. Now, let's talk about your Culture Club choices. And we'll see now how strange a young fellow you were when it comes to things like the first single or first piece of music that you remember getting.
I remember this very well. I had an aunt who taught French, and kind of through her, I became quite young, quite obsessed with all things French. And even though Brel was Belgian, to me, it was kind of French. And I heard Scott Walker singing Jackie, And there was a record shop in, what's the street down by the Pro Cathedral?
Talbot Street.
Talbot's, the one at the
Marlborough Street.
There was a record shop there, and I used to go in after school and rifle through the singles. And I found Scott Walker singing Jackie, and I loved it. I thought, it to me, you know, I was 14, 13, 14. I thought it represented sophistication and, you know, European, slightly dark glamour. So, yeah, I was incredibly drawn to the exoticness of Scott Walker singing Jackie.
Okay, let's hear a bit of it.
Okay.
And if one day I should become a singer with a Spanish bum who sings for women of great virtue, I'd sing to them with a guitar I borrowed from a coffee bar. Well, what you don't know doesn't hurt you. My name would be Antonio, and all my bridges I would burn. And when I gave them some, they'd know I'd expect something in return. I'd have to get drunk every night and talk about virility with some old grandmama who might be decked out like a Christmas tree. And though pink elephants I'd see, though I'd be drunk as I could be, still I would sing my song to me about the time they called me Shacky. If I could be for only an hour, if I could be for an hour every day, if I could be for just one little hour, a cute, cute in a stupid ass way.
That's the first time I've ever heard that, Peter. So is that from a... musical, isn't it?
No, it's Jacques Brel, who was kind of, you know, the famous French singer-songwriter. And the Walker brothers were really interested because they were kind of pop stars, but they escaped the draft in the States and they went and they lived in Scandinavia. So they recorded, you know, records in Scandinavia. So very, I've discovered subsequently that lots of very cool people like Bowie and people loved that record and kind of revered it. So, but that wasn't why I didn't know that at the time. I thought it was so exotic. And the idea of someone wanting to be Jackie, and you kind of wondered, what did that really mean? You know, so I just loved it. And I kind of wore it out playing it.
Okay.
I think my poor family, you know.
Right. Favorite album. And the reason I asked you was that from a theater show is that you have gone for your favorite album.
I know.
The original Broadway cast recording of Sondheim's A Little Night Music. Now, tell us about this.
I love Steve Sondheim. I was living in London. I was a student at St. Martin's, and A Little Night Music opened in London. And a neighbour of mine had seen, said it was one of, and I went, and I probably went 15 times. It was based on Ingmar Bergman's movie Smiles of a Summer Night. And Sondheim was going to do it with Bergman, and Bergman backed out, so he got William Goldman to write the book. It was brilliant. I mean, I like musical theatre, which makes me the uncoolest person on the planet, I know.
And what is it about musical theatre you like?
I like good musical theatre. I like it because it's so theatrical. I never think musicals really work in film, except for maybe Singing in the Rain. But I think the suspension of disbelief can happen in a theatre. I think it's harder to do it in cinema. I like the essential theatricality of people singing things that they haven't got the words to say. And I think, you know, I love the Great American Songbook and, you know, Kern and Gershwin and Rodgers and Hart and Cole Porter. And most of those songs, which would have, when theatre was kind of central to the culture, those songs that were big hits, 99% of them were from shows, you know, from musical shows. So I just love musical theatre shows.
Okay, and this particular one, Sondheim's A Little Night Music. Actually, we'll just play a little bit of one from that album. You could tell us a little bit more. This is, I think, quite famous track, Send in the Clowns.
Yeah, my least favourite track in
the
whole
show. Oh, really? Sorry.
That's all right. I hate this song.
You hate this song, but we still have to play it because that's the clip we have. You can tell us why you hate it in a
minute. All right, I will.
Isn't it bliss? Don't you approve? One who keeps tearing around, one who can't move. Where are the clowns? Send in the clowns. Just when I stopped opening doors, finally knowing the one that I wanted was yours. making my entrance again with my usual flame. Sure of my lines, no one is there.
Okay, I've heard better versions of that as well, I have
that's,
to say.
That's the original, and Steve Sondheim would say his favourite. It's Glynis Johns, and she had a tiny voice, and she couldn't sustain a note, so he deliberately wrote a song where there's one note per syllable. I mean, and he wrote it in an evening because they needed a song that part of the show. I don't like it because I suppose it's a kind of intellectual gatekeeping. It's the one Sondheim song that everyone knows, so I kind of can't bear it. Isn't that awful that I'm admitting that?
No, not at all.
But that's probably the truth of it. I love the show. It's all written to waltz time, and a lot of it would be kind of based on kind of early 20th century composers. So I think it's wonderful. But I understand that people run screaming from musical theatre, particularly men. Like you always see pained men in theatres whose wives have dragged them to musicals. And you know the gay men because the gay men keep the programmes and they're not asleep. I mean, that's a terrible generalisation, but it's kind of true. But I unapologetically love a musical.
Okay. Well, we have another little bit of musical because you love Sondheim's music and you want Sunday.
Yeah.
From Sunday in the Park with George played at your funeral.
Yeah, I do. Absolutely. Yeah. Sunday is it's an amazing piece. It's about George Seurat painting Sunday on the Island of the Grand Jatte. And it's basically, Sondheim wrote it, it's about artists and how they suffer for their art. And the first half of the opera is kind of a fictionalized version of George painting the painting with his mistress Dot, who's also the model. And the second part is his great grandson, who's a conceptual artist in the 1980s when the show was written. But Sunday's wonderful because it's the very end of the show, and they've managed to kind of the set director, the costume director, they've kind of reconstructed the painting. And it sounds really silly. I gave my students this year a project on it. And when I started to talk about it, I started to weep. So I get terribly, it's such a wonderful, beautiful thing. I love it.
Let's hear Sunday. And it's Mandy Patinkin.
And Bernadette Peters, yeah.
Yeah, singing this. Sunday.
It's going to be the hottest show in the UK next year. Ariana Grande is going to play Dot, and what's his name? The boy who was in Company and who was in Wicked, the dark-headed boy. I can't think of his name. Anyway, there.
Can't help you.
No, he was in. I saw him in. I've seen him on stage and lots of things.
Will you be at this? Will you go to this?
Well, it'll be full of lots of 13-year-old girls who are utterly baffled by the music, but it would be kind of interesting to see, yeah. But the tickets would probably be ridiculous, like 300, 400, 500 quid a ticket, you know.
Okay, favourite band or artist? And you're not going for a band because apparently you're not into guitars, electric guitars.
No, I was, like football, I was born without that specific gene. I am mystified when I see straight men pretending to play guitars. I think it's called air guitar.
It is called air guitar,
and
yes.
I cannot bear electric guitars. So I spent a whole youth not really listening to popular music. And I only started to like popular music really when I went dancing, and I like kind of black, kind of R&B, and God forbid, I'm going to say that terrible word, disco music, which I, because I was in New York in 79, 80 and went to Studio 54. So I love Cheek and Nile Rodgers and all of that kind of pop music. But, you know, on
Nile Rodgers, you know, plays a mean electric guitar. He's
yes,
done it
I know
in this
that.
Very studio.
I know he does. Yeah, yeah. Has he really?
Yes.
Wow. So, yeah, so I kind of, all the kind of band thing escaped me. I've never really been to a gig. People say they're going to a gig. The word gig makes me very
nervous.
We get
to gig in a second because you have nominated one. But anyway, singers, you've gone for a long list of female singers. Give us some of the names.
I love Joni Mitchell. I think Karen Carpenter is, every singer in the world should be made listen to Karen Carpenter. There's no melisma. There's no screaming. She has perfect pitch. She enunciates every single word. Who else do I like? Peggy Lee, Ella Fitzgerald, Sarah Vaughan.
Dusty Springfield.
Dusty's amazing.
Let's hear a bit of Dusty Springfield, Son of a Preacher Man.
Brilliant, Dusty.
Billy Ray was a preacher's son, and when his daddy would visit, he'd come along. When they gathered around and started talking, Dad and Billy would take me walking. Out through the backyard we go walking. Then he looked into my eyes. Lord knows to my surprise, the only one who could ever reach me was the son of a preacher man. The only boy who could ever teach me was the son of a preacher man. Yes, he was. He was. Yes, he was. When he started sweet talking to me, he'd come and tell me everything is alright. He'd kiss and tell me everything's alright. Can I get away again tonight? The only one who could ever reach me was the son of a preacher man. The only boy who could ever teach me was the son of a preacher man. Yes, he was. He was.
That's brilliant. Dusty Springfield.
Dusty in Memphis, it's probably one of the best albums ever made. It's brilliant. And I love the fact that her real name is Mary O'Brien. It's so brilliant.
Yes. No, best gig. As you say, you don't go to gigs. So you've given us an event at a piano bar in Paris.
Well, my friend, Patti LuPone, Clang goes the name drop. I've been friends with this woman who, she's not that famous, but she's famous on Broadway. And she had opened in Sunset Boulevard in London. And the New York Times reviewed it. She was taking it to Broadway. And Lloyd Webber, the critic said she was too young. So Lloyd Webber decided he would go for a more, you know, bums on seats name, and he hired Glenn Close to do it. So Miss LuPone was not best pleased and developed laryngitis and came to Paris for the weekend. And we had a friend called Jürgen who had this bar, which is smaller than this studio, on three floors. On this first basement, all these French boys would sing Edith Piaf tragic songs. And there was a 955-year-old piano player. So they're all going, Miss LuPone, Miss LuPone. And Patti was the original Evita in Evita on Broadway. So that's kind of what made her famous. And so Patti sang Don't Cry For Me, Argentina, and 45 homosexuals died and went to musical theatre heaven. I mean, it was fabulous.
We don't have that from your Parisian piano bar. But just to give an example of how she sings, this is With One Look.
Oh, from Sunset. Yeah.
Sunset Boulevard. Okay. Mm-hmm.
I play every part. I can make your sad heart sing. With one look, you'll know all you need to know. With one look, I touch everyone. With one glance, I eclipse the sun. Take a look and you will see why the world watches me. No words can tell the story.
stories my okay, that's Patti LuPone.
Yeah, singing a terrible... I hate Andrew Lloyd Webber music, but it's fine. As she's my pal, I'll forgive you.
We're getting all the wrong choices, are you?
All of that kind of lush, syrupy...
Yeah, I'm glad you're saying that. I was going to say that, but I didn't want to insult you.
I can't bear it. I can't bear it.
Right, we need to take a break. Peter O'Brien, fashion designer and lecturer, who is one of the artists for the incognito.ie fundraiser for the Jack and Jill Children's Foundation, will give us the rest of his Culture Club choices after this break. Welcome back to the Culture Club. Peter O'Brien is with us. And if you want to get involved in raising funds for the Jack and Jill Children's Foundation, incognito.ie is where you can go. Now, let's go to favourite movie, actor, director. What sort of stuff are you giving us here?
What do I like? I like Billy Wilder. I like kind of classic Hollywood movies. I love Terrence Davies movies. I love Distant Voices, Still Lives. I particularly like that because I really identified with the boy in a kind of working class area with glamorous aunties. Because I had glamorous aunties and he was listening to BBC and listening to the Carousels. And I love it because they have Blow the Wind Southerly by Joan Sutherland in it, which I think is gorgeous. I love his films. He made a relatively recent film called Benediction about the English poets in the First World War. I love his films. They're gorgeous. Who else? I love Luchino Visconti. Mostly because, as I'm a costume designer, he used a guy called Piero Tosi, who I think is the greatest costume designer who ever lived. And so I love seeing his costumes. And Visconti's films are wonderful.
And then for acting, Bette Davis.
Oh, listen, you know, she chews the scenery. She's brilliant. She always gives value for money. She never, ever, ever phones it in. I love a Bette Davis movie.
Well, let's hear a little bit of her in action as Margot Channing in All About Eve.
Margot, nothing you've ever done has made me as happy as you're taking Eve in.
I'm so happy you're happy.
Now look here, you haven't been running a settlement house exactly. The kid has earned her way. You had a pretty mixed up inventory when she took over. Merchandise laying all over the shop.
You've got Margot mixed up with a 5 and 10 cent store.
Make it Bergdorf Goodman. Everything on his proper shelf, eh, Max? All done up in little ribbons. I could die right now and nobody'd be confused. How about you, Max?
How about me what?
Suppose you drop dead. What about your inventory?
I ain't going to drop dead. Not with the heat.
This is the most ghoulish conversation. Thank you.
Nothing.
Max! Mon vieux! Fifi!
The kid, a junior that is, will be down in a minute unless you'd like to take her drink up to her.
I can get a fresh one. Karen, you're a Gibson girl.
Thank you, Karen.
The general atmosphere is very Macbethish. What has or is about to happen?
What is he talking about?
Macbeth.
We know you. We've seen you like this before. Is it over or is it just beginning? Fasten your seatbelts. It's going to be a bumpy night.
It's such a great movie. I love it. She's fantastic in it.
Now, given that you're a costume designer, I presume plays and musicals are something you're particularly interested in, are they?
Yeah, I love. I go to the theatre a lot. I love to go to
Well, we've established your love of musical theatre.
Oh, but I like straight plays as well, absolutely. I mean, I don't just go and see people doing jazz hands. I like a good play.
Well, if you were picking one favourite musical, what would it be?
Either Company by Sondheim or A Little Night Music, I think.
Okay, I know there's a big choice. And then plays, I believe Oscar Wilde?
I've done all of the Wildes except for The Importance of Being Earnest, which is a brilliant film by Anthony Asquith. I'd love to do Ernest. I'd love to do the costume. It's a great play. It's almost indestructible, although there is a tendency nowadays to kind of hammer things home and make them relevant. It's so insulting to audiences to presume that they understand nothing. I mean, Wilde has already done that for you. Wilde is absolutely taking the piss out of these people while appearing to revere them. I mean, it's so infuriating that theatres now feel they have to speak down to us. That word relevant makes me want to buy a machine gun.
Okay. And the best play you saw recently, you've given us one called Patriots with Tom Holland.
It was fantastic. It was about kind of when Russia collapsed and all the oligarchs started taking over. I thought it would be really dry and really boring and really, it was fantastic. It was directed by Rupert Gould. Fantastic play. Really brilliant.
Books. What do you read?
That's my big addiction. Two things, really. Books are the main thing. It's probably be the reason for my divorce if I ever get married.
I just keep buying books. I love books. To read, I kind of chose an easy thing. When I was in New York, I found by Central Park there were bookstalls, and there was an omnibus of all E.F. Benson's stories about Map and Lucia. He wrote them in the 20s and 30s. And Benson lived in a house in Rye. So Rye becomes Tilling. And they're kind of social comedies about these two powerful women who kind of outwit each other. They're the best books. It's like when you have a cold and you have chicken soup. If I'm feeling depressed, I read these books. Otherwise, there's a woman who I love, Sarah Winman, who's written some great novels. The last one she wrote was called Still Life, which is about Florence. And it's fantastic. I loved it. I read a lot.
Do you watch much television?
Not really. And I've, like everybody else, I've kind of almost stopped watching, you know, kind of regular television.
What did you grow up with, though?
I told you I was weird. Well, my father thought that TV, I'm 190 anyway, so, you know, I almost existed in a time when there
weren't exaggeration.
Televisions. But my father thought televisions were kind of common and they were bad for the brain. And anyway, so my friend next door, Michael Donoghue, had a TV. And then we eventually got one on Fridays or Saturdays. I don't know whether it was RTE or if we had, we might have had BBC or UTV. There was a thing called Continental Cabaret. And again, me, you know, longing to be in Weimar, Germany. I mean, so there would be people like Jacques Brel and the Kessler twins and all these people singing, you know, tragic songs in German and in French. And I loved it. I used to watch that. And I used to watch, there was a woman who used to teach children how to draw. What's she called? Blaheen on RTE. And I remember I loved the Reardons.
More modern, though. You've given us an opportunity to play a clip from Slow Horses.
I love Slow Horses. It's great.
What are we going to do?
And don't say nothing.
There's nothing to do. These guys are bloody good and they're ruthless.
The park can't protect every church in London.
Well, then they will have to pay the money.
And what happens if they don't?
Well, then there'd be a massacre.
At a random church in London, this is a nightmare.
Maybe not that random. There is one place of worship I can think of. Although it would only occur to a complete and utter psychopath.
You think he knows which one?
Wait, where are they going?
Abbotsfield.
There's already been an attack at Abbotsfield.
Which they are commemorating in a multi-faith centre shortly.
You can't just say like that and then just sit there and do nothing.
I'm not doing nothing. I'm sending my best agents. And you.
Jack Loudon, Sashka Reeves, Amy Fionn Edwards, and the last voice we heard there, Gary Oldman, in Slow Horses.
Why it's so good, isn't it?
It is.
It's really great, I think.
What is it about it, though, that you love so much?
I don't know. I think the writing's really good and it's really kind of adult. I think it got to be a bit action movie by the time the second series came around. It was a bit talkier maybe in the first series. But the actors are all, like, flawless. They're so good. I think Gary Oldman could cut it, you know, the smelly socks and the toes sticking out and the farting, and it could be cut back about 5%, I think, because it's kind of, you know, a bit caricaturish, but it's wonderful. I love it.
You have as your buried treasure a wonderful movie and a performance in it. The movie is the original Manchurian Candidate. The remake was rubbish.
Terrible, yeah.
But the original one with Frank Sinatra, wasn't it?
Absolutely. Janet Leigh, yeah.
And Angela Lansbury is your pick in this. Why?
Well, people know Angela Lansbury for Murder, She Wrote. Angela was a serious actress. Like, she really had serious acting chops. Look at her, you know, in what's the one with Charles Boyer where people use that expression now all the time? Is it Gaslight?
Yeah.
People use it to describe, you know, having a headache, I was being gaslit. But anyway, she plays, she was her first job in LA, she was 17, and she got nominated for an Oscar. Anyway, she plays Lawrence Harvey's mother in this, and I think Lawrence Harvey was 35 and she was 38. But she's mind-bogglingly terrifying in it.
Let's hear a clip of her in action in it.
It's been decided that you will be dressed as a priest to help you get away in the pandemonium afterwards. Chun Jin will give you a two-piece Soviet Army sniper's rifle that fits nicely into a special bag. There's a spotlight booth that won't be in use. It's up under the roof on the 8th Avenue side of the garden. You will have absolutely clear, protected shooting. You are to shoot the presidential nominee through the head. And Johnny will rise gallantly to his feet and lift Ben Arthur's body in his arms and stand in front of the microphones and begin to speak. The speech is short, but it's the most rousing speech I've ever read. It's been worked on here and in Russia on and off for over 8 years. I shall force someone to take the body away from him. Then Johnny will really hit those microphones and those cameras with blood all over him, fighting off anyone who tries to help him, defending America even if it means his own death, rallying a nation of television viewers into hysteria to sweep us up into the White House with powers that will make martial law seem like anarchy.
It's kind of terrifyingly apt today, isn't it?
It is. And it is so worth going and finding.
Yeah.
Not the remake.
No, not the remake.
Nonsense. That was brilliant.
It was, yeah.
Listen, we're out of time. Thank you so much, Peter O'Brien, for being with us.
Not at all, my pleasure.
Costume designer and also artist for the incognito.ie auction to raise money on behalf of the Jack and Jill Children's Foundation.
The Last Word.
With Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.